Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziperot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in STEM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at local, national, and international levels. Our guest today is someone who has successfully combined business and science in a truly impactful way. Todd McAvoy is a leader at Azure Group, a company that provides innovative solutions for the pharmaceutical, biotech, and healthcare industries. From his time undergrad at Shippensburg and his PhD at the University of Texas at Austin to his work in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Todd's career path is as inspiring as it is unique. How are you doing today, Todd?
I'm doing very well.
That's great to hear. So let's start at the beginning. What first inspired your interest in science? Were you always drawn to the discipline, or was there a really specific moment that sparked your interests?
Well, I think if I go back to the beginning, it's really interesting because when I went to Shippensburg, I went in as a history major. So I started college as a history major, and I found out, well, this probably isn't for me. My original intent was to go to law school. But I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. I'm just repeating more of what other people are writing and not really, you know, answering the question of why. And that's really what intrigued me most, is answering why. My best friend, Mike Zimmerman, was studying chemistry, and he said, hey, this is really fun. You did well with it in high school. Why don't you try it? Turns out after my first year of school, I changed my major over to chemistry, found out that chemistry was really, when you boil it down, it's just solving puzzles. And I found I had a really good knack for it. So I did really well with it. So my interest really was drawn not just by solving problems, but I had the opportunity to do like undergraduate research, which really drove my love for science.
That's so interesting. I feel like history is kind of the complete opposite almost. And you realizing that and figuring out that I want to go into science, I want to figure out the why and really hone in on your passion. So how did you, I know you mentioned going and doing research, but how did you explore more deeply? Were there like specific projects or opportunities that helped you solidify kind of your interest in chemistry?
Well, I would say I was lucky in the sense that I went to Shippensburg as the undergrad, fairly small department. I mean, I graduated with 13 people in my class of chemistry and biochemistry. So it was really close relationship with professors. I luckily hooked up with an advisor there, Dr. John Richardson. And, you know, I was doing undergraduate research my sophomore year, which most people didn't do until their senior. And when I did that, it was a little bit more than simply taking classes, right? You had this extra time in the lab, one-on-one. You could do experiments and fail, learn from it. So it really taught me a different side of chemistry. And that was more on like, why are we doing this and what can we figure out? So it was more of the puzzle thing for me.
Yeah, so after your time at Shippensburg, which sounds amazing, you chose to study at the University of Texas at Austin, which is another phenomenal school. What led you to UT, and how did your time there kind of shape your career?
Interesting question. So when I was graduating from Shippensburg, I really felt like I was done with Pennsylvania. I wanted to get as far away from Pennsylvania as I could. So graduate schools I applied to were Texas, California, Florida, and
all the warm
on the
states.
Visit. Yeah, everything warm. I was done with, you know, the cold temperatures. And I really wanted to go to graduate school simply to learn more. I felt like I wanted to just learn more and be able to have a more in-depth understanding beyond what I learned in undergrad. So I took the visit to UT Austin. And sometimes when you visit schools, you just get a feeling. And for me, that was the feeling I got when I went there. It was like, this is the place for me. All the professors, they're very passionate about their work, they're really excited about what they're doing. So I had the opportunity to go there, and I studied under Dr. Keith Stevenson. He was a new professor at the university, and I think one of the really cool things there was I got to start up the lab. I was his first graduate student.
Oh, wow.
It's hard. Like, had nothing in the lab to start. We had to buy a computer, you know, printer, everything to start the lab up. I think in terms of where I am and how it connects to my career, when I was there at UT, most folks only do the teaching assistant portion for a year or so, then they go on and have full funding from their professors. But I had volunteered to be a teaching assistant for longer. I was also the head teaching assistant. So I had the opportunity to teach other teaching assistants how to run the labs. So it really gave me exposure to more of a leadership role, even in graduate school. And that's kind of what I think pushed me the direction I am today, is helping people, teaching others, but also, you know, doing science myself.
Yeah, you're definitely in a more leadership role where you are now. And I know the feeling when you were talking about visiting a college and just knowing. I'm going through that myself. I'm a junior. So besides that, you talk about your professor. Are there any other professors or like mentors or experiences that had particularly stronger impact on you? I know you talk about being a TA, but was there, because I know you built it, a research that was like really interesting?
I would say if I go back to undergrad with at Shippensburg there,
yeah.
I think what was really, really interesting there was, you know, you do undergraduate research, but I think what was really great about it was we were connected to a partnership Dr. Richardson had established with a group at Penn State University. So we were doing like not just basic research, we were doing things that other folks are doing in graduate school. We were contributing to work that would be published in journals. And during that time, I was also able to get the opportunity to present at two national science conferences.
Oh, wow.
And this is all before the BS. And I think that really, it's not all on me. It was on the mentorship from Dr. Richardson when I was there. So it's all, you know, a great thing they have going at Shippensburg, very well versed in their science they have there. And it was great. So that really helped me get to where I am. If there wasn't as much involvement from the professor, from Dr. Richardson and others that are there, you know, maybe I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today.
Both of those, UT and Shippensburg and Dr. Richardson, sound so influential on you, and you can clearly tell that they really helped shape your career. Can you share a moment or a piece of advice from them that you still think about to this day?
I think moments that I really remember, Dr. Stevenson, he would get up early in the morning. You know, most professors aren't in super early, especially on a Saturday or Sunday, but when I'd go into work, you know, 7:30 in the morning, and he's there with me helping me build devices that I can do my experiments with. That's not the usual, but he had a lot of energy. I think that's the same for Dr. Richardson as well. It's like, get in there, do the science, explain what you can do and understand why. That's what I got from them. They both cared about my success, but also let me kind of figure out how to get there the same way.
So there are many of our young listeners that are trying to figure out their next steps. What advice would you give them when choosing a college or major, especially in STEAM?
When you're in this area, I think one of the things that's really important is to really think about where you could end up and what you could be doing. So for me, I've talked to some other folks about this, other students who are looking to either in high school or in college. It's consider what you want to do. Do you want to be at the bench doing hands-on chemistry? Do you want to do natural product synthesis, run reactions, do scale up? Do you want to do all that hands-on? If you don't, you can still do science, but they're more like non-traditional STEM careers, right? So you can do science, but maybe you're going to work in business development, or you're going to be in the quality function of an organization, which both of those areas provide tremendous value. But you're not running reactions, but you're still influencing the world through science. So there's a lot of other things you can do. I think one of the biggest pieces of advice that a friend of mine, Scott Hanton, I used to work with him, he mentioned to me one time is, don't think about what you want to do, but think about who you want to be. It's a different spin on the way you want to look at careers. Do I want to be someone that does this or this, right? So it's about thinking about what you want to be rather than what you want to do.
So with that and thinking about that, what qualities do you think are most important for a young scientist to develop?
A good question. So critical thinking is one thing, basically using data to make decisions. That's really critical. So I do that a lot. And, you know, I tell my daughter the same thing, and she comes to me with, you know, she wants to do this, this, and this. And I say, well, let's look at the data. What does the data tell you? And then I'm sure she gets tired of it, but it's the way I make decisions. What's in front of me? And I think that's very informative. So it's thinking about ways to make decisions differently than maybe you do now.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to your professional journey. You're now at Azure Group, a company known for its innovative solutions in pharmaceuticals and biotech. Can you tell us more about the type of work that your team does?
Yeah. So the group consists of several different business lines. So we have a consulting line, laboratory services, training center, and then we have a group called Clean Rooms on Demand and Testing Services. All of these together, we try to help organizations either start up, grow their business, or sustain their organization as they go forward. And we do this, like you said, for a number of different industry segments: pharmaceuticals, biotech, medical device, manufacturing. I'm within this Clean Rooms on Demand and Testing Services branch. So what we do is we provide a clean space for companies to do research, to do development work, or even manufacture under their own control. And these clean rooms that we maintain within these our facilities, essentially they're really clean environments. They minimize airborne particles and contaminants. And if we didn't do that, then the client's product or process could be harmed. So we effectively provide the space or the blank canvas, and then the client comes in and creates from there. We have these clean rooms, and the thing is, like, why would somebody come to us? Well, building clean rooms is expensive. And if a customer needs something quickly, it's often very difficult to build a clean room to GMP standards very quickly. So we have this space available to these standards. It helps companies avoid capital expenditures. It gets them into that space quickly. And in some instances, that allows companies to fail fast. And by that, I mean, if they have a new technology or a new therapy they want to try out or get to a certain part of the clinical trial cycle, they don't want to invest millions and millions of dollars in clean room space to find out it didn't work. So here we have the space. They lease it for a certain period of time. They come in, they do it. Hey, it's a win. Great. If it failed, maybe even better for them. They're not out a whole, you know, several millions and millions of dollars.
In depth, what would you say a clean room, how you entail that?
So within a clean room, we have effectively really tight control over the atmosphere, humidity, temperature. We have particulates. So we have HEPA filters on all the HVAC systems that feed these spaces. But in effect, there's a lot of really stringent controls on what people can enter, what they can wear, how to bring materials into the spaces. We have to clean everything a certain way. There's training involved on how to gown or put the old bunny suit on and then walk in parts of the space from, call it a less controlled area. It's still controlled, but the particulate count is a little bit higher, and you get to an area that's much cleaner as you go through. And that's where companies can then process their product with significantly less risk to it.
That's so interesting to me. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll see you back. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and this is Teen Scientist with Todd McAvoy.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming you hear possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 4 or wdiy.org. We couldn't be here without you.
Hi, I'm Abigail Wood, your host for Teen Scientist, here with Todd McAvoy. So we just finished up talking about you doing clean rooms and the types of groups in Azure Group. When you're doing this, your team approaches problem solving in such a fast-paced and high-stake industry. So how would you say that you kind of cope with that and deal with it?
So I think we have a really good team that is able to be flexible and pivot on an instance. So I think that's one thing you must be able to do. There obviously is rigidity to following regulatory standards within the industry, but at the same sense, it's like, hey, nothing ever goes the way we expect it to go. You need to kind of have to think that mentality. Sometimes it always does, but other times there's always a little hiccup and you just need to be prepared for it. And that's kind of just like anything in life, right? Just kind of be prepared, have backup for skill sets, and that allows us to, you know, maintain continuity and help our customers without any issues.
Yeah, you talk about flexibility. One question I always love to ask is about failure. Many students fear making mistakes, but often failure leads to success in my eyes. Can you share a time when you failed and then you learned from it?
Sure. So this is a really good question. Failure is tough and not everybody wants to admit it. But I think one of the things that you, as students are moving through life and into the real world, they'll find that one of the biggest challenges, the toughest things to get right in an organization is communication. So I found that out early on in my management days where we were making changes within a group, and that had to deal with reporting relationships. So that's like, you know, whose supervisor is who and who within the team reports to whom. So it's something we thought was easy to do. We went through it and made the changes. Unfortunately, I didn't communicate early enough to everyone, and I didn't necessarily articulate very clearly why we were doing this. Mm-hmm. So when I found out, it created some, you know, ripples in the organization within this small team. It ate at me the entire weekend. I was really concerned about the team and the fact that I forgot to do this and didn't do it on time and didn't articulate things clearly enough. So first thing, you know, we get in the next day and I talked to everyone, made sure things were outlined the right way and everyone understood. But what it does is it reminds me now, when I think back to that, is that change and communicating change really requires a plan. Explaining why is critical, but, you know, really thinking through and saying, well, how's everyone going to receive this message? And can we do a better job at communicating early? That's really what we need to have as a communication plan. So that's what I've learned from it. And I try to do that my best as we go forward here.
What advice would you have for young scientists who fail and are kind of having a hard time dealing with the failure?
So I think it's a matter of looking at the failure, what the impact is, what role you had in that, and what you can control. I think one of the best bits of advice I received was, you know, don't worry about everything, just worry about the things that you have control over. It sounds easy, but it's not. So for anyone who's experienced failure, it's like, well, did I have control over the scenario? What were my parts that I control over? What could I do differently? And how would I control that as we go forward? So that's something I would suggest.
Yeah, I feel like that in everyday life. That's just a great motto to always yep. have and think about. So you talk about Azure Group, flexibility, love it. How did you transition from your education into the professional world and kind of go into that?
Yeah, sure. So after I left graduate school, I did a short postdoc for the Naval Research Lab. And then I got an opportunity up at Air Products and Chemicals, which effectively was like the job description was my resume written down. It was great. It gave me the opportunity to do material science, you know, study structure property relationships. Again, lots of problem solving because it was an R&D role. The transition into industry there I thought was pretty easy for me because in graduate school, you're taught to be self-driven and to figure out the answers yourself. That's part of the degree. And I think one thing that most scientists need to think about, and they don't necessarily know this yet, but as you study science and engineering, math, what you end up doing is you're training your brain to solve problems in a specific way. So even though you're studying science, you're really, you're learning, maybe you're doing biology, you're understanding classifications of organisms, but you're really training your brain to solve problems in a different way than somebody from sociology or psychology. So when it comes to problem solving, you're ready when you come out with a science degree. So I think that made the transition fairly easy for me.
Going, because now you're more in a leadership role, going from more hands-on to that, what would you say your favorite is? What you prefer?
So I think it's a good question because it was a very hard decision for me to move from a pure lab, hands-on, at the bench role to something where, I don't do experiments every day.
Yeah.
And I find that hard sometimes, but I still always try to have one hand or one foot back in the lab so that I can see what's going on, ask questions. And I ask a lot of questions. I warn people about that. And I do that simply to learn more. And then also sometimes to help them, figure out their own answers. I'm always in the lab, always trying to answer questions or ask questions, get answers for people. I can't always stay away from it. I really love being in the lab doing science, but at the same sense, leading the group and helping them, go faster. That's what I like to do as well.
Science is always a blend in my mind. It's like so many different worlds all connect. And I think that's so cool how every little thing has a little part. And even though you're in more of a leadership role, that you still get back in it and ask all those questions is so important, because science and technology is advancing so rapidly, probably as we speak at this point. So what are some more exciting trends or developments you're seeing in your field right now?
In where we are in terms of life sciences, there's been an emphasis on cell and gene therapy to treat disease. I think it's an amazing thing, right? We're not necessarily just taking drugs to treat disease, but we have the ability now to, you know, correct faulty genes in different gene sequences. And we can replace cells that are damaged with new cells that are not in folks that need help, right? So I think it's amazing that we are able to do this with these advances we've made in technology. And I think it's just really innovative way to, you know, to help the world with disease control.
Like you said, our technology is advancing. STEAM is becoming increasingly interdisciplinary, blending areas like biology and data analytics, like you said, how we should be thinking, and AI. So how important do you think it is for future scientists to develop skills across multiple fields?
So I think it's absolutely critical. Understanding one area helps you understand another one better. And, you know, to me, the way I look at it, not everyone may agree, but to me, biology, a lot of biology is just chemistry. Mm-hmm. And chemistry, if you ever took PChem, it's all math, right? Yes. So you can explain mathematics, and you can use math, sorry, to explain chemistry, which explains biology. So I think it's amazing how these connect across. So when you learn from one field, you can actually understand the other one better. And I think data analytics is critical. I would love to have spent more time on that, learned more about that as I was, you know, coming through school, because it really, you can get a lot of information processed quickly and get a better understanding of massive data sets, which help you make better decisions.
Yeah, in my chem class right now, I see a lot of overlap from my past physics classes, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I already know this.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So how do you see the Azure Group adapting to meet these changes? Are there any new innovations or areas of focusing the company is exploring?
So we continue to adapt with all these changes in industry. I think for us, it's really developing these partnerships with our client base. And when they come in the house and they're using our clean room spaces, we just have to continue to provide that flexible space or that framework for our clients to develop treatments and cures more rapidly. So it's really getting close and making sure we're doing things together, and that'll help, you know, accelerate the pace of new developments.
So let's shift gears a bit. Outside of work, what are some hobbies or interests, and how do you kind of unwind after a busy day in your work?
I'm still coaching youth sports. I've done that since my sons were, you know, early elementary school, and I still enjoy doing that. In the last 10 years or so, I've taken up running. I love to do that, just go out for distance runs, and it really helps me clear my head and come back and reset, and I enjoy running a lot. Travel when I can, and if I'm traveling and there's an opportunity to run, I'll go do that too. So combine both of them.
I'm a runner myself. I love running in new areas and just looking all around. I feel like it's so peaceful. And balancing a demanding career with personal life is always a challenge, I feel like. Do you have any tips for maintaining the work-life balance?
Yeah, I think one of the critical things is we've got to learn, we're always on our phones, and we always have to learn to detach from them. I think that if you're working in industry and you have the opportunity to have a business phone and have a personal phone, that's great, because then you won't get business calls on the weekends, right? You can isolate those to the business phone. And I think the other part is, within anything we're doing, it's okay to say no. That's a hard thing for me to do, because I always want to be able to contribute. But all of us, no matter where we are in our lives, we need to be able to say no, because sometimes we just need to take the personal time for ourselves.
Yeah, I feel like setting that boundary is always so important. Has the balance kind of shifted over time as your career has changed, from going from more bench work to more leadership?
Yes, I would say it's definitely gone almost like on it's gone up considerably from the very beginning, where once I made a transition into management and the type of business I was in, you know, 8-10 years ago, something like that, starting into there was really hard. You had to spend a lot of extra hours. So it was hard to maintain that balance. But once once you get to the opportunity where you have a business built, where you have it, you have confidence in everyone, you're able to delegate, then you don't have to do as much yourself. Then you're able to detach and you have a more, you can have more balance in your life.
Yeah, with the group you're with now, it seems like everything's flexible, more enjoyable, and you kind of very happy where you are. So looking back kind of at your journey, where you are now, how things have shifted drastically, is there anything you wish you had done differently or something you are especially proud of?
I don't know if there's too much I would have done differently. Maybe just a little bit more of, you know, this or that, or maybe, you know, the data analytics, like I mentioned earlier.
I feel like that's always a good thing.
I've been pretty happy, yeah. Sure. I think in terms of being proud of accomplishments or specific things, I mean, there's a lot of things that I can point to, but I think the one that really sticks with me is just simply being able to see anyone on my team succeed, learn something new, and be successful at it. And aww. If I had the ability to help them get there, that's golden. Makes me feel even better. It makes them feel better. It's a win for both of us.
Oh, that's great to hear. So this has been such an insightful conversation. Before we wrap up, is there anything exciting happening at the Azure Group or in your career that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the business of science, since it's always changing, you know, at Azure Group, we're always changing. So we're getting into new areas, learning new things, providing new services to clients. We have to be flexible. So that's what we do. We grow with the business and the industry. There's always new opportunities within Azure. And, you know, if anyone's out there, we're always looking to ask people to keep us in mind. Yeah. I mean, we're always there. And I think we like to be in the conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Todd, for sharing your journey with us. We can't wait to see what you accomplish next. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in and watching Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and I hope you have a great day.